Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. It's Politics Monday. This election year, politics will be our topic of the day. And today, a look at how our voting experience is about to change. For years, voters in Mecklenburg County used touchscreen machines that created a paper tape register as a backup to electronic recording of the vote. But this year, voters here will encounter new machines purchased to comply with a North Carolina law requiring paper ballots to be produced to improve election security. Many North Carolina counties switched to an all-paper ballot system, completely eliminating computers. But North Carolina Elections Board Chairman Damon Sercosta told WFAE back in August that our new machines offer two layers of confidence.
It should give voters confidence, regardless of what mechanism they use to fill out their ballot, that they've seen their paper ballot. And then if we need to go back and audit that thing, we can do that.
But not everyone is so certain that putting a computer between the voter and the results is a good idea. This is what Marilyn Marks, the executive director of the Coalition for Good Governance, had to say at the meeting this month where these new machines were approved.
The touchscreen machines violate this basic concept of don't put a computer between the voter and the ballot. That's something we've all learned. That's what the cybersecurity experts have learned over the last 10 years or so. And every single day, we all see that on the news, the election security issues are escalating every day. The fears are escalating every day. And this system that you're being asked to sign up for tonight is a system that all cybersecurity experts say, don't buy it. It's old thinking. It's out of date. It cannot be audited. It cannot be secured.
That is an important and fundamental disagreement. Again, North Carolina Elections Director Damon Sercosta.
If we need to go back and audit that thing, we can do that.
And again, Marilyn Marks.
It cannot be audited. It cannot be secured.
So let's get to the bottom of this, shall we? Michael Dickerson is Mecklenburg County Elections Director. He joins us in our Spirit Square studio. Welcome back.
Thank you. Well, glad to be here.
Good to have you. Also with us is Liz Howard. She's counsel for the Brennan Center for Justice's Democracy Program and former deputy commissioner with the Virginia Department of Elections, and she joins us via Skype. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Michael, let's start with the disagreement, the basic and very fundamental important disagreement, the ability of these new machines to create a voting system that can be audited. Can they or can they not?
Certainly they can.
Why did she say that then?
Great question. She does great work and she keeps everybody on their toes, so that's really good. But this system, what your General Assembly had said 4 years ago when they said we're going to decertify the current equipment that we have, and this is what you need. We need to produce a paper ballot. This system will produce a paper ballot for everybody. And that's the auditable part of this whole process. It's all read into a scanner / tabulator. Mm-hmm. And that we've been using in North Carolina for the last 20 years. So this can be audited after the fact, if there is indeed a problem.
Could the old machines be audited after the fact?
They could.
And there was that paper tape, which we'll talk about.
There was that paper tape. I liked it. I thought they worked well. Always do well. The key with this and the security piece of all this is we're not on the Internet. We're not connected to anything wireless. We're not connected to any hardwire process. This is a closed system that just allows the voter to be able to say it starts from finish.
We're going to explore that, all of
sure.
that, in depth here. The Brennan Center for Justice, Liz, says that paper-based systems provide better security because they create a paper record that voters can review before casting their ballot. From what you understand of our machines, would that be true of our machines?
So the machines that you are about to use in Mecklenburg County will produce a paper record. And as Michael explained, voters will have an opportunity to verify the information on that paper ballot before it's inserted into a tabulator. And then that is the paper record that is relied upon during the post-election audit.
When we had the paper tape machines up until the last election, were those machines, did you ever have to audit the paper tape? Did you ever pull the tape out of the individual machines and actually compare it to the vote?
Sure we did. We did every year. North Carolina requires, after each election, the state board, after the election, not during the election, but after the election, the state board will direct us to hand-eye audit a certain percentage of precincts. And they will direct us, after we have finished the voting, they'll select three random precincts and say, go count those.
So how will this be different from that with this new paper ballot system? How will your job auditing be different?
Well, our job auditing now is we have, instead of auditing the tape, we'll actually audit the voter's ballot
right
there. So that will continue to do the
make your job easier?
Process. I believe it's going to make my precinct official's job a whole lot easier.
No hanging chads.
No
discrepancy about what, if I vote for candidate X, the paper ballot will clearly say I voted for candidate X. Is that right?
Well, exactly. And what we're doing is we're going through a ballot marking device. That's, a few years back we were on this program, we were talking about equipment. And you had, a professor from Princeton on at the same time. And he said, you know, in a few years, Mike, we'll be all going to ballot marking devices. Well, the prophecy of that professor has come true. We are now all going to a ballot marking device so that the voter in North Carolina can now see that ballot and not doubt whether or not it was cast for who they wanted it for. They can actually see that this was actually who they voted for.
In advance of the last couple of elections, Liz Howard, we've been speaking with computer experts, voting machine experts, and others about the safety of using any kind of computer for voting. And everybody agrees all of these machines must be air-gapped. In other words, these machines must have never touched the internet in any way. But not everybody agrees that we can make even those machines completely safe. At the Brennan Center, you focus on cybersecurity and elections. Where do you come down on this?
So I think it's important to remember that there's, you know, not going to be a voting system that we can make 100% secure. So the issue is how are the election officials going to identify the vulnerabilities? What are they going to do to mitigate those vulnerabilities? And so, you know, ensuring that the machines are not connected to the internet is one important step, but there are many others that election officials need to take along the way. North Carolina is, you know, pretty far down this road. So they have paper ballots and they have a post-election audit. But we think, for instance, that while their current post-election audit procedures include a lot of important steps that we think should be included, we think that they can improve their post-election audit by doing a risk-limiting audit.
And a risk-limiting audit is what?
So a risk-limiting audit is where you take a randomly selected statistical sample of all the ballots cast in the election, and you review those ballots to make sure that the election results are accurate. So did Mike really win his election? And that's what voters care about, and that's what election officials care about, too.
Is that what you did with the paper tapes?
No, we actually did a sample audit of each one race. The state will direct you to do this race. Now go pick these precincts. And we literally counted the entire ballot for that precinct for that race.
Is risk-limiting auditing, is that something lesser than what you were already doing?
No, I don't think so. I think you need a combination of both on these. I think that the whole concept of the risk-limiting audit is to make certain all the way down the line that we're safe. The premise that the state works off of is we're going to go after this. If it counted this, then the rest of this should be true. But Liz is exactly right. There's so many more things that we all need to do as elections officials to make certain that we're prepared.
Like
what is our real problem? What do we really have to go for? We may not know most of it. And the Brennan Center came out with a great piece last week or week before last that was talking about be prepared for everything that you have to do. My bigger fear is not having somebody prepared to do their job, to identify a risk or to identify a problem, and have that expose the entire process. We're confident that we will do everything we can to make sure it being the election, is carried off openly and honestly.
Right.
But I also want to make sure that everybody else out there feels confident in our process.
You were, prior to being with the Brennan Center, Liz, you were with the Virginia Department of Elections and involved in there in the decertification of all paperless voting systems. But also, at the same time, you were helping move the state toward the adoption of online paperless absentee ballot applications. It sounds like you had your feet in both camps. Am I just misunderstanding what you did there? You moved the people in the voting booths toward paper and those absentee ballots away from paper. Is that right?
So it wasn't the absentee ballots. It was the absentee ballot applications. But I think that the point that you're making is very important, because election officials are always trying to balance the benefits of technology with the reality of the importance of the work that we are doing. You know, we are responsible for administering elections that are going to determine the elected officials at the federal, state, and local level. And we have to make sure that, you know, as Michael was suggesting, not just that they are secure, but the public has confidence in the security of our system. So specifically the absentee ballot application that we made available online, we thought had appropriate security measures because, for instance, it was connected to our DMV, the Department of Motor Vehicles information. So an applicant will put in their DMV license number, and we will match them. So that was one of the kind of security features that we implemented in that process, which is just, you know, it's kind of in between somebody who is already registered to vote and who is going to be subsequently casting a ballot.
Hmm. Today, if I'm correct about this, only 11 states in America use paperless machines. Virginia transitioned to paper a couple of years ago, and so have several other states. We're about to. What has been the impact of reverting back to what may be, to some, an old-fashioned way of voting, paper ballots or a machine that produces a paper ballot? How does that impact anything about the election? How does it impact the time it takes to count the vote? How does it impact the accuracy of the vote?
So a couple of things. I would note that that number is shrinking even further. We've estimated that it looks like only 8 states are going to use paperless voting machines as their primary voting method in some part of the state for 2020. And I think that the conversion to paper-based voting systems is only going to increase voter confidence, not just while they're at the voting booth, but after the election, in the event that there are any questions, election officials will be able to go back to that actual paper ballot to make sure that things worked out as they were supposed to on election day and when they were and when the ballots were tabulated.
And at some point, even these paper ballots are going to be tabulated. They're going to interface with a computer or a scanner, which is a computer, and be counted that way, at least initially.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I see where you're going. I see where you're going with this, Mike. And you're exactly right. How do we guarantee they're secure?
Yeah.
And there's a couple things, and Liz touched on that. And the biggest thing is preparation.
Okay. And I'm going to get into the weeds on this scanner thing, because of the way our ballot will report our vote to that machine
right. In
just a moment. Michael Dickerson is here. He's the director of elections in Mecklenburg County. Liz Howard is counsel for the Brennan Center for Justice's Democracy Program. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the integrity and the security of our elections, particularly here in Mecklenburg County, as we are about to be facing brand new voting machines and a new way to vote, although this time around on the March 3rd primary, you will not have to present voter ID, because once again, That is tied up in the courts. It's on again, off again. It's off right now. No voter ID required.
Thank you.
Michael Dickerson is with us. He's the Director of Elections from Mecklenburg County. Liz Howard is counsel for the Brennan Center for Justice's Democracy Program and a former deputy commissioner with the Virginia Department of Elections. So getting back to our machines, our new machines, Michael, these new machines will begin March the 3rd with the primary. They will actually, take me through the process. We go into the booth. We're faced with a touchscreen machine, not unlike what we had before.
Exactly.
But it will then, when we're done, when we say, finish, do my vote, it will print out a ballot.
Correct.
That we, the voter, can look at and say, yes, I did vote for him. I voted for Michael. I voted for Liz. I voted for Dogcatcher.
Right.
Right? What happens then?
And then it's run through a scanner. And then a tabulator that is at that site, and that tabulator will read the who you voted for and tally everything for each voter that goes through the process.
You have said to other reporters that these new machines cannot be hacked,
right?
And they will provide an accurate count. But I'm told that the touchscreen voting machine is not just printing out a paper ballot that says, I voted for candidate X in this race, candidate Y in that race, straight ticket in this race. It will print out a barcode.
Correct.
A single barcode, right?
No, multiple
actually
barcodes.
So for every race, there'll be a barcode.
Exactly.
So that is what the scanner is reading.
Right.
They're not reading the names of the candidates.
Right.
How do I know that the barcode is accurate? I can't read the barcode.
Well, you can't, but you can't read what the fill-in-the-oval code channels are either. So I see that as being similar to the process.
Well, I mean, these machines will have to be programmed by a human being. Somebody has to say, this is what this barcode means.
Right, exactly.
You say they can't be hacked. Isn't that where the hacking begins?
Well, that would be if that was the case. But we're programming this myself and a staff are actually programming this on a standalone computer. And at that point in time, after we program the ballot, go ahead.
That's right.
After we program the ballot, then we take it to another team and they will actually load this ballot onto these ballot marking devices and then also into the scanner for reading purposes. And then when they're all done voting, after voting on March the 3rd, they'll bring all of those documents, literally drive it back to my office. That's why it takes me so long. You're driving it from Cornelius back to our office downtown, the results to our office. Then we're going to download that again into a standalone computer at our office that's not hooked up to the internet, not any way, shape, or form online. Then we're going to provide that air gap between us and the state report.
How do you get the information, the programming information that's required to create this barcode and make sure that the barcode relates to the paper ballot vote?
Right.
How do you get that information into the, how many machines do we have? 2,400 machines.
2,400.
How do you get that information into those 2,400 machines?
You're going to download that result or that information onto a thumb drive.
Ah.
And that thumb drive is then taken over to the computer.
All 2,400 machines?
All 2,400 plus the 350
How do you verify the integrity of the thumb drive?
Because
the thumb drive could be produced by somebody with nefarious purposes, or it could be touched the internet on another computer that's actually on the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be. But what we have to purchase is an encrypted thumb drive straight from the vendor.
And it's an ordinary thumb drive? Like anybody could buy at Target?
No, it's not. You can't do that.
Okay.
I'm
just trying to get
the problem is I argued the cost on it and said, boy, that sure is expensive for a $5 thumb drive I could buy at Target. I said, no, that's the case.
So with paper ballots, as you pointed out off the air, many times in the past when we had politics conducted in cigar-smoked rooms, a lot of paper ballots would be found a month later in the trash or in the East River in New York, and they never got counted because they were just dumped by the mob.
No.
By the mob. What happens to the paper ballot, the physical paper ballot, once it's scanned into a machine?
Mm-hmm.
Do you keep those?
I have to keep them for 22 months.
Okay, and once it's scanned into a machine, that machine has never touched the internet. It never will touch the internet. How does that information from the tabulator at each precinct get transferred to you for a complete and total central tabulation.
Right. What they do is literally drive it down to my office.
The machine?
I have a chief, just the thumb drive. They'll drive down that thumb drive result and the ballots down to my office that night after the election's end.
So I'm just trying to get the bottom of this. Mm-hmm. We have one thumb drive that programs all 2,400 machines.
Mm-hmm. Well, one for each 2,400 machines. And keep in mind, those are not the machines that tally your vote.
Right.
That's
But the machines that are programmed, so that we know that candidate A is over here,
mm-hmm.
You're doing that with some help from other people in your office.
Sure.
And you're putting that information on a single thumb drive or 2,400 thumb
drive? No, we're loading it down into the single computer in our office that only works with this software. We've only got one. It doesn't hook up to the internet. It stays standalone in our office.
How do you know that?
How do I know it? There's no wireless card, and we don't have any access to a port on the machine.
Okay, so then that information from that machine is somehow put on a thumb drive. That
Correct.
Programs the actual... I don't want to get too deep into the weeds, but
sure.
I really want people to understand.
You sound like you're programming for me. That's great.
Well, okay, so but you take that information that you put in the main computer and mm-hmm. you put it on a thumb drive. That thumb drive is inserted into all 2,400 voting machines that we touch.
Right.
Then, at every precinct, there is a tabulator.
Right.
A different thumb drive
exactly.
is used. So I don't know how many precincts there are. How many are
195.
Are there 195 thumb drives?
Different thumb drives for each of those tabulators.
Okay, and how do you ensure that those thumb drives have never touched anything but those machines and your computer?
Here again, it's the same process. They're the same one, a special encrypted thumb drive that comes straight from the vendor that has never touched anything outside, and it's only gone through the software that we use to program and the actual computer that downloads.
So the Senate Intelligence Committee, Liz, noted in a report last July that paper ballots and optical scanners are the least vulnerable to cyber attack. If you agree with that, why would that be? Are you there, Liz? Okay.
Yeah, sorry. So paper ballots, again, like we said, right, provide actual evidence that the voter, that you can go back to after an election to confirm that the election was properly tabulated. And as Michael suggested earlier, right, like this is a measure, and as you suggested earlier, this is a measure that cybersecurity experts and election administrators all believe is very important.
When we talk about the integrity of our elections and the possibility that there may be interference from a bad actor, a foreign power like Russia, there certainly is reason, legitimate reason for concern about that, and there's certainly legitimate reason for concern about their getting fake information into the ecosystem through Facebook and Twitter and other social media. How worried should we be about the integrity of our elections from a voting machine, paper ballot, tabulation system? It seems to me that we have how many precincts here?
195.
195 precincts here. There are how many counties in America?
3,000 some odd counties.
Okay, so do the math. You'd have to, none of these counties and precincts talk to each other.
Right.
To get in, to disturb the results, what would that require?
Visiting 3,000 different counties in this country.
So,
good luck.
Is that really a something we should be worried about, Liz? Is that even possible?
So this is Liz. I would say this, right? The decentralized nature of our election administration here in the United States, as Michael was suggesting, right? Like where the localities have a large amount of discretion in administering the election, and there's not a central authority that requires uniformity across the United States. So that absolutely has some important benefits from several standpoints, such as you were mentioning, where it would be almost impossible for a foreign adversary to successfully breach over 3,000 different election systems. However, I think it's also important to note that we are only as strong as our weakest link. And in North Carolina, certainly in Virginia, and in several elections you've seen at the national level, they are decided by a small number of votes. So in the event that there was a successful attack on, you know, just a small number of election systems at the local level, that could have a big impact at the federal level.
prior to winning the last election, then-candidate Donald Trump accused the system of being rigged until he won. And some believe he's setting us up similarly now so that if he loses his re-election bid, he will claim again that the system is rigged. Is that the greater threat, that somebody will point to our system and say, it's a dishonest, rigged system, therefore destroying somebody's confidence in the election system? Is that the bigger threat?
Well, I think certainly that, you know, election officials, you know, are working very diligently to make their systems more secure. They absolutely are taking this threat seriously, and you've seen a lot of work done. So, for instance, as you mentioned earlier, right, the Department of Homeland Security has designated election infrastructure as critical infrastructure. So now you have DHS working hand in hand with locals to identify vulnerabilities and determine ways to, again, mitigate those vulnerabilities. So not to say that there's not a lot of work to be done, but, you know, we are absolutely making progress, and that's at the state, local, and federal level. So we're all taking this very seriously.
Prior to the last election, when we were talking on this program and others about security, a couple of experts mentioned that most of the voting machines in use at the time were produced by one or two vendors, the largest of which had ties to one of our political parties. How many vendors did you talk to, Michael?
Three different vendors interviewed.
How many vendors are there?
It's a good question. Three, at least. No, there's probably maybe a half a dozen, a dozen vendors. I'm not sure, Liz, you may know exactly, but I know our state required each county before you selected a vendor, told a public demonstration.
If it is true that some of these vendors have significant ties to one political party or another, does that concern you?
Not really. I mean, yes, they're in the business to sell voting equipment. If I'm selling voting equipment that only supports one party, of course, I'm not going to last too long. I'm pretty much going to fall on my face right away after that process. They're not. I don't want to say that's not something we think about and we make sure, but we want to make these completely fair.
In testimony before the House Committee on Administration earlier this month, Liz, you told Congress, quote, 80% of voting machines in use today come from three private companies, and that a successful cyber attack against any of these companies could have devastating consequences for elections in vast swaths of the country. And further, you told Congress, election vendors play a critical role in our democracy but have received little federal or congressional oversight. Even colored pencils, you say, are subject to more federal regulation than voting machines. How concerned does that make you?
You're 100% correct, and, you know, I think that, you know, this is a significant concern. You know, the voting equipment vendors and other vendors that play a critical role in our democracy, such as vendors that, you know, create and build, for instance, electronic poll books or the websites for the election officials that voters rely on to determine whether or not they're registered to vote or where they should go to register to vote. You know, the election officials may not know whether or not they use, you know, reasonable internal cybersecurity measures, whether or not they conduct background checks on their own employees, whether or not they are owned or controlled by foreign nationals, and a variety of other issues, just the very basic sort of information that election officials deserve and the public deserve to know.
We spent a significant part of last year talking about the 9th Congressional District in North Carolina because an election was overturned.
Correct.
Due to election fraud on the part of people taking absentee ballots in Bladen and Robeson County. Is that the bigger concern to you as an elections directing official, that it's not going to be the machines or the programming of the machines that get us into trouble? It's going to be the human element out in the field doing something.
It's always a human element that I worry about. If if it's absentee ballots, which are a paper ballot and sent in to us, you're right, that did overturn an election that we had and delayed 9-10 months for the actual seating of a congressman from Congressional District 9. That concerns me. The human factor is in every piece that we play, be it programming the equipment, staff delivery of the equipment, the training of my precinct officials themselves. We train them to be aware of things. So that's sort of where we leave it to catch.
So given what happened in the 9th District mm-hmm. and the fact that we are mandated to have paper ballots now all across mm-hmm. the state in some form, how do you handle absentee ballots? And how do you handle the people who come in to do early voting? Where does that information sit until Election Day? Those are two separate questions.
Correct. The last one first. And early voting starts here in North Carolina, February 13th. We'll be going out to 20 different sites. And it's a great process. Folks love it. They appreciate it. And it's a fantastic opportunity for people to vote early. Over the last 20 years, more people show up to vote early than they do on Election Day.
Right.
And we've grown by 50% in our voter registration rolls. So that's fantastic to us. But that system is all kept in brought into our office every night. Those ballots are literally brought into our office every night and secured in our vault at our office, what we call our vault at our office's passcode entry. Those are brought in. The names of those people that voted will be then listed, and you can't vote again. So your vote will be stopped. Absentee by mail, our state has put some processes in place to try to strengthen that process. No longer can you email me a signed request for that absentee ballot. It has to be delivered by the United States Postal Service or by FedEx for that request for an absentee ballot. Your absentee ballot is required to be canvassed or witnessed by two or by a notary, other people that saw you vote that ballot and put it in that envelope. So that is all sent back to us, and then we process right before Election Day till we can get those results out there.
Michael Dickerson is the Director of Elections in Mecklenburg County. He's in our Spirit Square studio joining us via Skype. Liz Howard, counsel for the Brennan Center for Justice's Democracy Program. We'll continue in just a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Charlotte's preparing for 50,000 visitors this fall. It's not for a football game or a music festival, but for the Republican National Convention.
But how will the RNC impact Charlotte? And that means you.
Join me, Lisa Wharf.
And me, Steve Harrison, for the Inside Politics podcast, where we cover the RNC and the 2020 election through the lens of Charlotte.
Listen to Inside Politics now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and WFAE.org/InsidePolitics.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Michael Dickerson is here from the Mecklenburg County Board of Elections, and Liz Howard, counsel with the Brennan Center for Justice's Democracy Program and a former deputy commissioner with the Virginia Department of Elections. Our new machines, our new voting machines that we'll start using on March the 3rd, are made by Election Systems and Software, ESS.
Mm-hmm.
They are responsible. ESS is responsible for about 50% mm-hmm. of the nation's voting machines. What do we know about that company?
They've been around quite a while. They were the same company that we had purchased the previous equipment from. They're out of Omaha, Nebraska, so that's about as wholesome as you can get.
And you told me that they actually, we got a deal on these new machines because they actually took back the old ones and gave you money for them.
Exactly.
About $1 million.
Right. We got a trade-in value.
Why would they do that?
Get them out of the market.
So they're going to destroy those machines?
I presume once they said they'd give me $1 million, I quit asking questions what they were going to do with it at that point in time.
So our new machines are a hybrid system, touchscreen computer, produces a paper ballot. Voters can read that ballot to verify that it's registering what, in fact, they said. But then it's fed into another machine, which reads the barcode that takes all of our aggregate votes and puts them in a in a barcode,
right,
so that they can be read. Marilyn Marks with the Coalition for Good Governance, we heard at the very beginning of the program, said that these touchscreens violate the basic concept of, quote, don't put a computer between the voter and the ballot. Why not just use a plain paper ballot and have human beings count?
And if that's what we want, and about a week or 2 weeks later we get the results, that's what we would end up
doing. So we're doing this for the TV anchors? Is that what
No. I'm doing this all for the voters. Let me just put it that way. But you're also talking about how many different things do we vote on? There's a lot. We start with president, and we end up with soil and water conservation district supervisor.
And it's different in every precinct.
In every precinct. That's the nice thing about this machine, this express vote, this ballot marking device that I have. I stick that blank piece of paper into that panel, select your precinct, and your ballot style will pull up for you if you're, when you go to vote early, if you're in North County or if you're in South County or if you're in West Boulevard, or you're all the way out Independence, that ballot will be for you. Great idea.
How many voters do we have here?
740,000.
I hope you bought a lot of toner. These machines were used in one of our recent elections on a test basis, and you said that their performance was outstanding, just what we expected. That's a quote. Did you hand count every vote that went through the tabulator to ensure that barcodes and the readers were producing the same vote that a human being could read from that paper ballot?
Exactly.
You did.
Every ballot we counted. Every, not just one race, but every race on that ballot we counted. It was the mayor's race last year, City of Charlotte, City Council. Mm-hmm. So you had that, the City Council, City Council at large, you had school board on there. Every identical piece of paper that the result produced was the same as what the electronic
Guilford County is using paper ballots exclusively, no machine at all.
Right.
Right? Are they using a tabulating
device? Everybody has to use a tabulator.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But other counties are using different kinds of machines other than just the one that we chose. What made you choose the one that we will be using?
I think, well, it wasn't my choice. I've got a five-member board that unanimously approved this system. And I think that what they really liked about it was two things: familiarity with what we currently use. It's a similar touch screen. And the fact that we don't have to have thousands and thousands of ballots sitting out at a precinct and not have any way of recording anything different.
And no loose ballots that people can pick up and mark and vote two or three times.
Exactly.
So, Liz, given all the things that we've talked about, all of the intense scrutiny of our election system going into the 2020 election, how confident are you that it will be not necessarily glitch-free, because there are always glitches, but that the security and the integrity of the election results will be accurate?
I think 2020 will be the most secure election that we've conducted here in the United States in a very long time. And I think that voters should be confident. In North Carolina, they have a paper ballot and they have a post-election audit where, you know, with your questions about the barcode, I think, and Michael alluded to this earlier, that for the post-election audit, they don't rely on the barcode. For the audit, they rely on the human readable portion of the ballot. So even if they can't do decide to use appropriately a tabulator to obtain the original results, you can hand review just a small number of ballots after the election to provide confirmation that either particular machines were working correctly, or if you use a risk-limiting audit, that the actual election outcome is accurate.
And Michael, one final question for you comes from Mary, who emails, will blind people still be able to vote independently?
That's a great point. Everybody now can use this. The ballot, you plug in a headphone and that ballot will be read to you. If I use a SIPPUF device, I can plug in my device and that ballot I will be able to vote on my own. That is fantastic. The ADA community can vote just like I do or you do, there will be no need to have additional help.
And if you're in a wheelchair, you'll be able to access the touch screen.
Exactly. They all fit tabletop.
Okay. Michael Dickerson is the Director of Elections at Mecklenburg County. Liz Howard is the counsel for the OA Council at the Brennan Center for Justice's Democracy Program. Thank you both for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.